Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, Christopher Gallagher. It's Thursday, the 6th of October, 2022, and we have plenty to talk about this evening. I am joined, as always, by Christopher Sormani. Hello, Christopher.
Evening, Gal. Terrific to be here. Dark outside, raining. Aye.
Just a description of things that are happening around.
Mirrors the mood. After last night. Maybe that's a bit much, but we'll get into that.
Yes, it's great to have you back, Samantha. You obviously missed last week. Alan was back last week, but
Didn't miss last week. You told me I wasn't required.
Yeah, that will still miss. Yeah, you did. You did a hell of a shift on the agenda, I have to say. So fantastic.
Cheers.
And Alan was at the game, so he's currently still in Germany, and we've got the fantastic Barry Gallagher stepping in. Hello, Barry. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. Hopefully we can bring some a ray of sunshine to counteract this, the feeling and the weather.
Yes, the feeling and the weather. It's the nights are fair drawn in.
It's the second time
I've used it this week. But right, okay, let's look at it. We're going to talk about the Leipzig game from yesterday. We've got a stats corner from Christian, just going over the tactical and stats elements from yesterday. We'll look ahead briefly to the game at Celtic Park, because I think it's good to kind of sharpen the focus on what we require from that. And then we'll kind of look at the St Johnstone game. And we've got the lineup quiz. Another lineup quiz.
Oh, nice.
Highlight of the night.
Lovely stuff. Right, Leipzig. Celtic went down 3-1 to Leipzig in Germany. It was an interesting game overall. We did a reaction straight afterwards, which you can get on thecynic.co if you subscribe. Subscribing to thecynic.co, you can subscribe for, on a monthly basis. You can subscribe on a yearly basis. Podcasts every single day, which over the coming international break will be very interesting. We've actually got Take Me to Your Paradise, which is a feature that Chris Sormani has created, which is fantastic, talking about experiences at Celtic Park. But that'll be on Sunday. Let's focus on the Leipzig game. It's 24 hours later. Barry, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling a bit better than I did straight after. It's hard not to think like pure Scotch there, so like everything shit, throw it all out,
yeah.
Which I probably would have thought if it was this time last night. But a bit more philosophical today. And obviously it is disappointing because it seems to be, no matter the manager, no matter the system, no matter the players, we seem to have this sort of hoodoo away from home. But I think on reflection, when you realise you're up against a very good team, I think we maybe underestimated them when the draw was made because of the performances against Rangers last year. But you could see the quality they had throughout their side. And I think while we were well below par, I think we still had the chances. And that's a positive that we are creating chances against really good teams.
Yeah.
But that's the margins in this competition. Like the chances they had, they took them. We didn't. And they were a lot more solid than we were defensively. So there is things we can pick apart and take positives from, but it's hard not to be downbeat because of how well the previous performance in the Champions League and that 40 minutes against Real Madrid. So, but also with the caveat, we were missing our two centre-halves as well. So a real mixed bag, but I don't think it's Scotch earth, as I said, because I think we can still make an impact on this group.
Sormani, the Champions League's pure heavy difficult, isn't it? And the margin for error is almost zilch. You can make mistakes and sometimes you'll get away with it, but 90% of the time you'll be punished in some way. How are you feeling 24 hours later?
I'm okay. I mean, it's disappointing. Not so much when you bring in the clear and obvious mitigating factors about how good a side they are and the players that we had missing. It's frustrating because we've seen it so many times. Frustrating because a lot of the stuff in there was of our own doing. For me, it was the worst of the three performances, quite clearly.
Yeah.
A 3-0 defeat to Madrid is still a 3-0 defeat, but you could take things away from that game. There was periods when we controlled that game. We controlled most of the Shakhtar game. I don't think we were in control of that game at any point last night.
No.
And I think that the two centre-halves being out probably, I mean, we're a wee bit rusty in terms of our form just now as well coming into it, so that probably played a part. Excuse me. But I think the confidence that our first choice centre half pairing normally brings to the team, I don't think can be underestimated. And I think that that then played through the teams because last night, the worst, you know, Juranovic, for instance, is a player who we're all really comfortable with. We've talked about having him a multi-million pound move. I think he was the worst. It could have been the worst of the back four last night. Maybe Jens, actually, but we'll come talk about that. So
you expect something from... what I kind of agree with you on Juranovic. You know, Juranovic is talked about in a really, really high regard. People talking about worried about we're going to lose him. Mm. You know, we can't hold on to him and stuff. But, like... I just don't think he's kind of kicked on this season. And that's not to say he's playing like badly or anything. I just don't think he's shown the form that he has shown.
I think that's true, but I think it goes back to the point that I was making about the fact that I think that defence being unsettled isn't good. Taylor, I thought, was very shaky at the start, and then he was steady enough going forward. I don't mean going forward, I mean going forward in the game.
he's done a hand thing,
you know, that's a visual thing. But, you know, I definitely think that uncertainty and that the drop in quality has an effect on the team going forward. So, I mean, we'll come in and we'll break it down, we'll talk about some of the mitigation around why we are where we are and things like that, but fundamentally it just was a bit crap last night.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things about, you know, having, you know, I'm sure everyone's talked to their friends, their family members and everything, colleagues today and stuff, it just didn't feel that different, Barry, from days gone by in regards to Celtic. It's not like, you know, you could see the clean, obvious sort of Ange ball, I hate that phrase as well, but Ange's kind of style and philosophy, you could see that in the Real Madrid game, you could see it in the Shakhtar game. Yesterday, there's a number of managers you could have put pin to as manager, and that's my disappointment, I think.
Definitely, and I think that's why it hurts so much, obviously, because the fact that we do have this defined style of play, well-lauded style of play, and yesterday it wasn't apparent at all. I think from the first minute when they went on that chance, you could see the midfield was all over the place.
That was typical Celtic in Europe, that first 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Could have gone back to Porto away in 2001. It was just the same old, same old. And I think from that moment, so Manny mentioned we never really had control of the game. I think we all had that because we've got that sort of in our history of that happening in recent history. You think, oh no, I don't like this from the very first whistle. And I think there was no clear, defined style of play, whether that was because the opposition were so good, but it wasn't the things that we've been doing well under Ange. And in the previous two games, there has been that defined play, but yesterday it kind of went out the window. And I totally agree on the point about Juranovic. And I don't know, maybe this season if it is, his head's been turned. I know that's obvious to say, but there was a lot of speculation. And he just hasn't kicked on, as you mentioned. But yeah, there was no defined style of play, and it looked just like sort of chaos theory last night.
Yeah, and I mean, you touched on it, Barry, as well, about how it could have been different if we took our chances. I would have felt that more in the first two games, but it goes back to the point where the lack of control that we had in the game, and even when we equalised, you know, we were under the caution, we got the goal, and it was a great piece of play, and I'm sure we'll talk about it. But then immediately after that, it's like we just kind of ceded control again and everything kind of fell back. You know, and there was moments at that as well when something would go for us and we would immediately follow it up with something very poor. I'm sure we'll talk about their second goal shortly as well. But that is the most disappointing thing. It's just so much so that we've seen it all before, and it's, you know, when people talk rationally about it, and rightly so, because there is a rational argument to say that they're an expensively assembled side, and, you know, Nkunku's probably the most, you know, sought-after forward who's available for a bigger club, if you know what I mean. And he certainly showed that last night. But, you know, we kind of... It was a wee bit toothless, and that's not what we've been used to.
Yeah. Barry?
I think the most frustrating thing on that is, as we've already said, that all our sort of big away defeats in Europe over the years, it always seems that we don't make the other team work hard for it. And it is so frustrating, because if you are undone by a piece of brilliance, which you could argue...
their third goal was.
Yeah. You've got to hold your hands up and say fair enough, but the fact that we're gifting them chance after chance and we're not learning from it, no matter the manager, no matter the personnel. It's just so frustrating because I think even, as Samani says, when we did get the goal, it still didn't feel right. We've got something here because you're just thinking it's only a matter of time before we make the mistakes again and let them in.
You've made a point there, Barry, and I kind of want to pick up on that, you know, where you say, you know, it's happened so much in the past that, you know, there's a sort of, we understand it. I just don't understand why it's happening again. Just in that, is it the fact, you know, Ange's style and how we play with that really open kind of aggressive, I know aggression is a sort of catch-all term these days, but, you know, we're very back to front really quickly. We like to kind of play pace and stuff. Is it just a case that Red Bull are just a team that, they kind of are like our kryptonite in a way, in that like other teams have different styles that we can play against, whereas Red Bull, how they play, it's just like too much of a styles clash.
I think there is a bit of that as well, but listening to Ange last night as well, like, we didn't do the things that we normally do well. So
yeah, that's true.
It was very much Ange ball light with all the things that have led us to this point that gave us the confidence going into this campaign. None of it was apparent last night, so I think there is a bit of that because they were a very good counter-attacking team, as was shown from time and time again, and even from our corners, they broke up the park. But I think if you were to ask Ange that question, he would come across at the same point that we were the masters of our own downfall because we didn't do the things that we've been lauded for, the things that we don't stop, all of that. There was none of that yesterday. So I don't think Ange would be making excuses. I think he'd be, and he looked pretty angry last night because I think a lot of the mistakes were self-inflicted because all the things that have got us to this point, none of it was apparent.
Sir Manny, you know, you used the phrase toothless, and I tend to agree. Why do you think that is? Would you lay blame at the manager's door? Would you lay blame at the player's door? Because if you take away the two centre-halves, so obviously it's our third and fourth choice centre-half pairing, you can really at this point put any of the two of them in third and any of the two of them in fourth. But other than that, it's our first team. I mean, with you know, you could talk about Maida's form, you could talk about, you know, Jota on whatever wing and whatever, but essentially that is our first team. So that's the worry I have as well.
Yeah, and on that though, I think we're lacking confidence and we're clearly out a bit of form. It's difficult to tell that domestically because so, you know,
we usually have enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Europe's, you know, probably took a bump with the St Mirren game and then we kind of toiled against Motherwell. But I didn't think for a second that was going to affect us going into the Leipzig game because it's a completely different mindset. And you can see that the players have got up for the previous games in Europe and you're just thinking, okay, that's going to...
You kind of hope it was like a welcome distraction for them to park the domestic form.
Aye, absolutely. Yeah. Almost a stage for them to go and show their stuff. But it might be that we are just lack of confidence, out of form just now. You know, that wee dip, you know, the centre-half's been out, the rest of the team's first choice, as you say, but sometimes that can change.
Catalyst, yeah.
You can start to think about, well, wait a minute, even a guy like McGregor, for instance, I'm then maybe not going to do that because I know that if this doesn't come off, I don't have Vickers and, Starfelt behind me. He's not going to say that publicly. You know, he might not even think that, but it might be subconscious in some of the players in terms of what they're trying to do. One thing I would caution against, though, is, and it always happens, is when a group of players start to perform poorly, you immediately start to think about bringing somebody else in for them. Juranovic is a case in point. People are saying bring Ralston in.
No.
I don't think that's an answer. And I don't think Ralston's, again, we've talked at length about where Ralston was at the start of last season, you know, to where he is just now. He's an option in that squad. But you want Juranovic to get back to where he was and what we know he's capable of, because that level that he's capable of is so far higher than where Ralston is. But I think if you then start switching players out in that manner, I don't think the manager will, that doesn't send good signals, do you know what I mean? So it's probably almost persevering with what we know is our best team and just trying to ride this out just now.
I mean, what I would say on that, and I'll bring you in a second, Barry, is how two players, Juranovic and Callum McGregor, how they've been performing over the international break for their international teams. Mm. Both really well, both to a high standard. And I'm not saying either of them are playing badly for Celtic. They're just not maybe shining as brightly as we know they can. Anthony Ralston for me is absolutely not an option, and that's nothing against him. I think he's a good player. I just think if you think that JJ was outpaced yesterday at points, Anthony Ralston's about 10 yards slower than him. Mm. It's because it's not one of his attributes, Barry.
Definitely, yeah. I totally agree. I think you almost have to play these guys into form.
Yes.
So McGregor will be out now for at least a short period anyway, potentially longer, we don't know yet. But I think that it definitely does have an impact, because you could see Joe Hart obviously doesn't have the confidence, I think, in the two centre-halves. You mentioned McGregor with what's behind them, and you could argue the full-backs as well, because they're not getting the ball as quickly. And that's been a criticism of Carter Vickers and Starfelt. Have you thought they were bad at playing out with the back? What have we got now? And you always make the point, Sir Mari, about first and foremost, you have to defend. And I think that's what they really do. And
They do the simple things really well.
Yeah.
In a way that Jens and Welsh kind of don't.
Definitely. And I think we mentioned that word we always used to say about Scott Brown, the intangibles. So I think even having that security there, knowing that they can defend first and foremost, and the rest of the team can sort of mask their weaknesses by taking the ball off them in other positions. But when you take that base out, it does have that sort of soft centre. But even without the two centre-halves, I think the biggest concern last night was the midfield three.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the case for the last sort of wee while. You mentioned the loss of form. I think all three, Hatate, maybe the exception, but certainly McGregor and O'Reilly, there's a sort of concern there, I would say.
Talk to me about that, your thoughts.
I totally agree. O'Reilly's a funny, funny player. One minute you think he's going to be a world beater, and then the next minute he seems to just be kind of floating about. You know, there's always question marks over his ability to finish games and stuff. There is a player in there, but for me, of the midfield three, he's the one that's most expendable, who you would look and say, no, we can maybe get something better in there, even with the options that we've got. Hatate, I would tend to agree with you. I think he's definitely been the best. Last night wasn't particularly good, but we still produced a fabulous moment of quality for the goal.
The thing with Hatate in that situation is, you know, being the player in that midfield three, if the other two players aren't necessarily in sparkling form and you're having to do a little bit more, you're having to cover a little bit more, that's why I think, you know, when a midfield three like that are playing and one player's not in such bad form, the other two are, I don't want to use the phrase dragging them down, but it can kind of spread around like a virus in a way.
Aye. He's over having to overexert himself because he's doing a job of three men.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't disagree with that. With Callum McGregor, though, McGregor has not been at his sparkling best for the last few games. Right. What I will say last night is, obviously he went off injured. I think we completely collapsed when McGregor went off.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that was on the basis of his performance on the night. I think it was just his importance to the side. He's the captain. And after that went off, it was almost like we don't believe we can now win this game. I know, you know, obviously we got the goal and stuff, but at no point did you think, you know, somebody or anybody's capable of grabbing this game by the scruff of the neck. So they weren't particularly, none of them were particularly good last night. All that energy that you're looking for from those midfielders that we got in the Madrid game where they all ran themselves into the ground, didn't see that at all last night. And the minute they took McGregor out of it, it just looked as if it was a damage limitation exercise.
Yeah, I mean, Barry?
Yeah, and I think that is the point. I don't think it was because of McGregor's ability as such. I think it was his presence and the sort of, you speak about it a lot, Gal, you always see him talking. He's talking people through the games, and I think you miss that when he's not there. But O'Reilly, for me, is the one who has been the most disappointing in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And I don't know, I think his role's potentially changed this year, because you see at some points when we've not got the ball, he's the furthest forward.
Yeah, he's the furthest forward pressing.
And I don't think, he is a good presser, but I don't think he's got the engine for it, as you mentioned. And it can look very early on, especially when you're chasing the game, after 35, 40 minutes, he looks like he's blown out his arse. And I think we're maybe asking him to do something that's maybe beyond his capabilities. And that's not to write him off, but I just think you're not using him to the best of his ability.
We're also asking a guy to come from League One to the Champions League in the space of seven months.
Yeah.
So I mean, this is a learning curve for a lot of these players. You know, obviously the players from that have been playing in Japan, they've obviously never played in the Champions League, and it is the toughest club football in the world.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of lets to play for these people because no one's writing anybody off. But it is just the, you know, if Celtic played really, really well and there was just three unlucky breaks, you'd still be really frustrated, but you'd be like, well, at least we're carrying on what we're doing. Mm. But that's not what this was.
Sorry, Barry, if you want to come in. On you go.
I was just going to say, when you were saying that there, Gil, what I had in my head was Leverkusen away last year.
Yeah.
And we had half the squad that we have now. But that was more encouraging than last night. And we're, what, a year further down the process, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And that was the most sort of criminal thing for me, because we could see clearly last year that we'd not have the players to play this system or philosophy, but the building blocks were there for sort of green shoots. But yesterday, there was nothing even to mirror this time last year in a lesser competition.
Chris?
Yeah, that is disappointing, because last season in Europe overall was garbage. You know, the campaign, generally speaking, was pretty poor, right? But we showed a blueprint, if you will, of what we thought we were going to get. And let's be fair, right? We've seen some of it in the Champions League. It's up another level. We've seen some of it. But the starkness of the drop-off last night was really apparent. And again, we are sounding really negative here. So the point that you make about O'Reilly in 6-7 months going from League One to the Champions League is absolutely spot on, you know. And a lot of these guys, you know, they'll have played, and a few of them will have played in the Champions League, but most of them haven't, you know. It's a big, steep learning curve. Playing this system is, there's an overexertion involved in it. You're going to be running really hard, working hard, you know. We don't know, you know, sometimes it just might not be there fitness-wise. So there are probably reasons and mitigations out of it. But the biggest thing as well, though, is what's probably been exposed is the drop-off in quality from the first-choice players. It was only a few short weeks ago, nobody in this podcast, but some people were speculating that we had two teams that could win the Scottish League.
I hate that part.
Man, I mean, even at that point, you would have been dismissive of it, but it's been blown so far out of the water, and I think that's the problem then. So even if you've got a guy, let's take McGregor, for example, right? He got injured, unfortunately, last night. See, if he'd been carrying a slight knock where he was kind of match fit or whatever, but not quite match fit, but there, and we played him, you know, and that drops off in his level of performance, you're going to do that because you have to do that, because even though we've got other options in midfield, they are far short of the other players, and that's the problem. It's almost like when you take one wee cog out of the machine, you know, you could maybe carry one, but see, if it becomes a couple, it starts to expose the deficiencies in the side. The problem we've got, though, is we're not playing in the league, and we don't have the finances where you can have a big squad of like-for-like players that are going to be able to slip in. Like Man City playing Man United, beat them 6-3, and their first two-choice centre-halves are out. You know, I know it's a different stratosphere, but our squad cannot cope with any key absences.
Yeah.
Clubs that play in bigger leagues are more able to adapt to that because of the money they can spend.
And I think also coupled with the lack of personnel is, you could argue that 5 or 6 of our key players who did play are miles off their best form.
Yeah,
so put the two of them together and you can start to sort of legislate, although how painful it is, why a performance like that came out last night. Because you would argue, see, when the form we were in going into the Madrid game, and we took that into last night, I think it'd have been a far closer game. We'd have had a real chance, a real shot of beating them. But just the way the last month or so has gone, with the drop off of form and the injuries, it's all kind of culminated in last night.
See, when we got forward at times early in the game, I think if you were pressing well as a unit, asking questions of them, I don't know how much of a backbone Leipzig have got. They didn't need one last night.
The biggest criticism they've had is their defensive frailties. Yeah.
It was a lot of the soft centre stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I mean, Werner as well, he's tracking back. That was just ripe for exposure. And there was, you know, even the keeper was getting hassled, you know, and we've seen Maida and Kyogo when they're sharp and on form, running the legs off of defenders and things like that. There's potentially a weak underbelly there. A lot of people are quite rightly going, Tedesco was out the door, they've got Marco Rose back in, well-organised, pressing team, you know, difficult to beat. And assuming that Shakhtar got them when we would have liked to have got them, then that's true. But Rose has not come in and flipped you know, completely eradicated all of those deficiencies there. And I think one of them is that defensive frailty, but what you need to do is be able to get at them, and we never really did that last night.
And I think you saw there was a couple of times in the first half where their passing was a bit short and we were in, but we didn't have the conviction to capitalise.
Conviction.
Yeah.
And that's what they did have. And that's not to say the game would have gone any differently, but we sort of, when we got the ball, it was like a shock to us, whereas when they got it, they just punished us.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that we need to learn to become more ruthless in the Champions League.
And see, if we're talking about the chances, and as much as I'd said I don't think we were in control at any point, goals change games. There you go. I love a cliche, right?
Do it in that English accent, either.
Goals change games.
Perfect.
You know what I mean, girl?
Bet365, Chris Amani is available for work.
Other bookies are available, and I'm available for work for all of this. For instance, right, so Hitati, the one where Jota kind of fell away. Jota didn't anticipate it. Hitati takes a touch, he scores. He takes a touch and he's more aware of he has the goals.
Was that the one when the keeper was down? Yeah.
The keeper was down. Puts that in the net. Kyogo, the one where the ball comes to him in the middle of the box and he's
got to finish that.
You've got to finish that. Now, it's entirely plausible that they would have then got lifted their game enough to score and beat us, right? But at that point then, if you're doing that, at that point in the game, because it was the first half, not second half, where I think we really dropped off, at that point then, they're starting to question themselves a wee bit more as well. I don't want to say that it's fine margins, because people talk about fine margins as if that game could have went either way, whereas I think from start to finish, they deserved it and would have won it. But the fine margins are when you've got conviction, confidence in your own ability, and when you've got a chance to ask those questions and you don't take it, it's just a self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of where it goes.
Yeah, I think there's something about this level that if you take the lead, it breeds a different type of confidence than you conceding for. I do think that. I think, especially for a team like us.
I think as a support, but also I think the team would say it themselves, that the fact that we've had so many chances in the previous two games, I wonder if that plays in their mind. Because if you don't take them, you'll think, oh God, this is punished us, or weren't necessarily punished, but we should have won in Shakhtar, or should have won in Poland. And if we'd taken those chances against Madrid, we would have given them something to think about. And I think when you think of those two chances, and Kyogo's header, etc., and Greg Taylor's shot, I wonder if that plays into the players' minds that, oh God, we've not done it again, when we've got a real chance to take the lead here, as you say. So I don't know, it's something that has to change, and it is something that has been a criticism of this team even last year, even domestically. The amount of chances we create compared to what we score is a bit of a worry. I don't know how we fix it. Maybe it is we just need to take the lead at Celtic Park against one of these teams and really give ourselves a confidence boost. But it is a worry that every game now that we've seen, we've had these chances and we haven't taken them.
Yeah, again, we want to reiterate this level is incredibly high. It's the Champions League is obviously the highest league in terms of club competition. It doesn't make it any less frustrating, doesn't make it any less annoying. We did the reaction yesterday and we broke down absolutely everything in the game. So thecynic.co, as I say, you can sign up and listen to the reaction. But Sir Manny, they had scored a goal that was, his big toe was offside. The first minute we almost concede. Then Celtic were never really in control of the game. I don't think necessarily that Leipzig were specifically in the first half. I think they took control in the second half. But, you know, it was no surprise when they scored the goal, when they went ahead. Maybe how it came about with, it came from us having a corner to them scoring. It went from one end to the other in 16 seconds and it all comes down from, a miscontrol from Callum McGregor. And then he makes the toe poke that puts unlucky. I don't know why he doesn't bring him down. But thoughts on their goal that they scored, that first one?
Well, you summed it up. I think the commentator said 16 seconds from us having a corner to them scoring. I know they're a good counting their attacking side. But a more cynical team, McGregor would have brought him down, taken the card, attack stopped. A sharp an on-form Callum McGregor probably wouldn't have miscontrolled the ball at the edge of the box. So it's one of those things. Now, I think you do have to focus on the finish from Nkunku. You know, he looked a real quality. Class act. A guy who disappointed me last season. But he looked really good, strong, fast, great finish. You know, you can talk about Hart coming out, and you can talk about Juranovic as well, right? And those are all just criticisms, but I thought he looked excellent doing that. But for me, it was just, you know, just be more cynical. Just, yeah, when they're able to break at pace in that circumstance, you know, once McGregor's made that error with the heavy touch, what he does then is he just, you know, be a wee bit more. Yeah, a wee bit more streetwise, Chris, that's what I'll say.
Then we had a period where, you know, we had at least three or four opportunities. And the fact that we didn't take them, you know, was really disappointing. But we equalised. Barry, talk me through that. I mean, that goal was really well worked in regards to pressing and to, you know, blocking off the passing lanes and, you know, great pass from Hatate to Kyogo, great awareness, great finish.
Definitely, and I spoke earlier about having a lack of conviction. I think this was the one time that we did have in terms of aggressively intercepting that the mistake. That brilliant pass from Hatate and Kyogo slows himself down to allow Jota to catch up with him.
Time.
And then a lovely first touch finish from Jota. And it was a great goal. And as I say, you enjoy the moment because you've scored in the Champions League, but I think the way that the game had been panning out, there was a worry that, oh God, this is just going to make them more angry now. But no, I think that was the one time where we showed that we do have quality in this team. And I think the three players involved in that goal, we really need them to have that sort of, we need a whole 90 minutes of that sort of thinking from them to give us a chance of winning, because we know they can do it, but they're just kind of showing it in brief sort of fits and starts.
Mm. Everyone watched the game, so we're not going to go into too much more detail, but Sirmani, Joe Hart, you know, they have a disallowed goal. Everyone's cheering in the stadium, which I can completely understand. And then it's like the TV doesn't almost catch it because he literally kicks it. You know, he said in the post-match interview, I mean, he actually kind of threw Ange under the bus a little bit, because he said, you know, that's how the manager wants us to play. And he said that, you know, they were playing with a front three and I tried to get the ball to Greg Taylor. And it's like, well, did you? I mean, I don't want to... What's your thoughts on Joe Hart? Because he's maybe not in the form this season that he was last season.
First of all, last night is something I've been waiting on with Hart. Not even necessarily in the Champions League, because I think people go over the top with...
Oh, we saw it on Saturday as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. but there was a question mark on Saturday. Some people will point the finger at Juranovic and Hart, right?
That's fair.
Put that to one side, right? Last night was... And it was an inexplicable error off the back of a moment of joy. I mean, that first time I'd heard about the rule where if you block the keeper's line of vision, it gets chopped off. And brilliant. Last night, anyway, I was all for that. Then to go and do that was absolutely deplorable. Now, point I've made, and you'd mentioned earlier on, with Starfelt and Vickers, they're there to defend, right? First and foremost. If you then get somebody who's a ball-playing centre-half, you have to then assess that, their ability on the ball compared to any defensive deficiencies they've got. Same with a keeper. And last year, Joe Hart, I thought, was excellent for us. We've known for a long time he's shite with the ball at his feet. See, for most, well, at least the last four or five games, Joe Hart has not done what he's been good at, and we know he's bad with the ball at his feet. Now, he's... We went from Barkas to Hart, right? And it can't be understated how fucking shit Barkas was for us, right? I mean, he might be doing well in Holland, but it was terrible for us, right? So then we got a goalkeeper who can make big saves. You know, even last night, closing players down, there was a couple of blocks that he made. He's capable of doing that. But what we've started to see is him make errors, as well as the fact that he's probably not suited to the style. So I don't think it's unfair to start to say, do we look for somebody else other than Joe Hart? I think that's probably fair.
Yep.
What I don't think we do is go, let's bring in Sigrist or let's bring in Scott Bain, because I think both of them are... Sigrist is, you know, the weaknesses that they have are the same as the ones Joe Hart has. But I don't think it's unfair to start to think, maybe that's maybe we need another goalkeeper here.
So instead of thinking, I'm going to change it up for Saturday, you think I'm going to bring someone in January?
Potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
And again, it's almost like the window's closed. He's the best goalkeeper at the club, well known. So that's, for me, he is there. And it's the point that you said, you need to play these guys into form. You need to play them into, I mean, unless it gets to the point, because it's really stark with a goalkeeper if you're making glaring mistakes that you probably need taken out for your own benefit. Unless it gets to that stage, you keep playing them. But I think the search for a new goalkeeper, I don't think it's unfair to say that now.
Definitely, and I think you would be hoping that there'd be, we've led to believe that things have changed in the way that we scout players now, so it's maybe the case that they did have someone in mind, that this maybe speeds up the process a wee bit for January.
Yeah.
But yeah, and the other point about, I don't think you take Joe Hart out because of his leadership qualities as well, especially if McGregor's going to be out. So we need people in there who can lead the team. But see, just that, we mentioned the footage of the Celtic fans cheering when the goal was disallowed. I was thinking, oh God, like I don't like this, because I didn't anticipate that within 30
seconds.
And then my thought was, this is why we can't have nice things because of that. But yeah, I agree. I think I would have hoped that we were looking for someone to replace Hart, because he's not getting any younger, and if we want to play this style of football. And I think I'm just surprised it's taken this long for him to be punished from playing out from the back. And that's maybe credit to him, because he's given it his best shot of trying to do the things that he's not good at. But yeah, it's glaring. And I think it just sort of summed up the night that, again, back to that point about we're not making them work for things. We get a chance at that, we don't take it. They get it and the ball's in the net. And
that's it.
Yeah.
See, playing out for the back, I think sometimes is a bit overstated. You know, not you, Barry. I'm talking in general, because he's not playing diagonals like Ederson or anything like that, right?
Doing that clip ball to the touchline.
You know, not, he's not capable of that, and we know he's not capable of that. But he's able to get... A lot of it's about...
You're able to make a five-yard pass, for fuck's sake.
Yes, right. And a lot of it's about being able to get the ball forward quickly. And you see how quickly he runs and rolls the ball and plays it and stuff like that. So I think that's overstated to an extent, although you would definitely love somebody who's capable of breaking the lines and all that jazz that he's not capable of doing. But when he stops doing the one thing that he's very good at, that's when you start to go, wait a minute, Joe.
I mean,
wait a minute.
Yeah, I mean, he is.
Wait a minute. That's what you do.
I thought you were saying that,
Carlos. I know, that's your point. But I literally did wait a minute when he said that. But I mean, yeah, because he is getting older, you know.
Like, yeah, yeah.
See, if you look at someone like Craig Gordon, right, who makes mistakes on a weekly basis for Hearts, right, but is still lauded as this great goalkeeper. If you put Joe Hart, if you switched him around, I think, you know, you would see deficiency.
It's the same keeper.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of my point, though. So the guy who's lauded as this, you know, oh, he's the best goalkeeper in Scotland. I mean, is he? You don't highlight his mistakes the way you would when he was at Celtic.
I definitely think the point about doing things quickly is a good one, because it is when he has that time to think, and you can see that he's not confident at just getting the ball moving quickly. It doesn't even have to be, like as you say, like an incisive pass, but he has that doubt. And how often does the times where it looks like it's rolling in because he takes so long to finally move it? So so I think he just needs to, it's that word conviction again, just make the pass quickly, give it to the centre half quicker, and that would help, because obviously it's not ideal because we don't have the goalkeeper that we would love. But get the ball to the centre halves, and then you're moved up the park quicker. But it's when he dilly dallies and he waits a second or two, that gives the attackers the chance to kind of be running down on him.
Here's what Ange had to say, and I think he kind of sums up pretty well.
Ange, commiserations. How would you sum up that game tonight?
Disappointed. Yeah, obviously in the outcome, the defeat. I thought we were well in the game. You know, we. First half, even though we were 1-0 down, I thought we had created some good chances. Obviously, they were three on the counter attack, but I thought, you know, we were just as dangerous going the other way. So, a matter of just hanging in there, and we got a good goal. And we just, after we scored, we kind of went into the shells a little bit in terms of our possession, and got a bit negative with our passing, started passing the back too often, and really disappointed second goal because that was the kind of crucial one we conceded, and that kind of changed the course of the game.
It seemed like twice you had the momentum, you were on top, and then they hit you. What happened from your perspective in there?
Oh, as I said, they're a good counter-attacking team, so you know that's what they kind of prey on, and they've got some quality players who will hurt you. But yeah, the second goal's self-inflicted. It had nothing to do with the nature of the game. It's just, as I said, we were just too negative with our passing. We kept going back to Joe for no reason, under no pressure, and we almost invited them to sort of get on top of us. And you know, you give them a second goal, and then you know, like I said, away from home makes it a difficult task.
You said how disappointing it feels, but it must feel good on a small level, at least tonight, to see the aggression that you want from your side borne out in the goal that you do score.
Yeah, and we had that all night, you know. But that's what I mean, you know. There's no reason why we can't keep doing that, you know. It's and look, I get it. It's, like I said, a lot of us just experience at this level, guys believing they belong, guys believing that they can, you know, achieve success at this level. That it's not easy to translate that into people when they're out there. So, but you know, there's a lesson there for us tonight, and yeah, we know when we're aggressive and play our football, we can cause anyone problems. But when we're not, then it's going to be very hard for us to be successful.
How's it looking with Callum McGregor's injury? What exactly was it?
Yeah, it doesn't look good. I mean, yeah, again, we're very unlucky with the goal because you know, went to have a shot, and obviously, yeah, something up, tweaked his knee, and put an enormous effort to chase back, and it was his sort of toe poke that put the guy through. But you know, looking at him doesn't look good, but I'll wait and see what the doctors say.
And what's the latest with Cameron Carter-Vickers?
Oh, we'll see. He'll have a session tomorrow with away from the main group, and yeah, hopefully he's not too far away.
Ange, thank you.
Excellent.
Pretty honest, as always, the whole negative with passing thing I think is really interesting, and just passing it back to the goalkeeper a lot. We've not really touched on Jens and Welsh, but I think it's safe to say that they are not the answer. I think Jens looks...
He was worse than Welsh. I thought Welsh actually kept it fairly simple last night, whereas Jens, from that first minute, all I could think of is, I think I made the point earlier today to someone, that it looked like a glitch in FIFA where you're not controlling your own player. You just seem to be running away from the danger.
Yeah.
I was like, where the fuck is he?
His passing was awful.
Yeah. How many times did he... Particularly on his left foot, which isn't his strongest foot, straight into the middle of the park.
Yeah. I think you look at that and you think, you know, he's got till the end of the season to earn his contract, I guess, because he's only on loan. But on current form, Somani, you probably wouldn't bother, would you?
Probably not. I mean, it's... Was it 1.2 million or something? He held up okay against Real Madrid because he had a real defender next to him. Now, notwithstanding the Modric goal, I think Starfelt makes the interception there and he doesn't score. But, you know, I think that he's looked okay in a couple of games, but in most of the games he's played, and certainly the ones with Welsh, he's looked really poor. And even... You know, some of the goals that we'd conceded in the league, most of them were through his, you know, the Ross County one, and then, yeah, and then again, you know, Love Street, and it was just positioning wise, he doesn't seem to be, you know, where he is now. He was brought in to be a ball playing centre half, and as you rightly said, he really wasn't very good at that last night. So for me, it's like, you know, we've got a real problem once those two are out, you know. I wouldn't sign Jens on the basis of what we've seen, you know. Maybe he deserves a bit longer to prove it. You know, I don't want to... I feel unfair because just totally saying the guy's garbage, because there's... A few weeks ago, people would be saying, ah, you know, he might come onto a game or whatever. But the signs aren't looking particularly good. And definitely, if he's not alongside one of the established first two, I think that he's... You know, we're on hiding to nothing with a guy.
Yeah, let's go to Stats Corner. And welcome to Stats and Tactics Corner with Christian Wolf. Christian, we've got you remotely from a bunker underground after that performance yesterday. Joking aside, You've watched the game back, I believe. What did you make of the game overall?
I'll tell you what, it wasn't a joke watching that back. That was not fun. Yes, undisclosed location I'm coming from. I just had to watch the game back last night on the commute as well. And what do I think about Christopher? I think there's a lot to unpack, first of all. And we do have the review on Tuesday. We can go really a lot into the detail. But overall, I think I feel a bit worse after having watched it again, because I think the issues with Celtic yesterday was, yes, there's individual players, but for me, the main culprit was the way the system was executed, and especially defensively.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about yesterday was, you know, there was a lot of focus around Stephen Welsh and Moritz Jens, and you know, they were culpable at points yesterday, of course, but you know, all in all, that was a pretty, you know, first choice team.
Yeah, and maybe get back to Jens and Welsh specifically a bit later, but it was a first choice team, and it was a team that should know the system. Especially, well, I guess it's the thing that you know the system, but I think, again, we saw a transition for Celtic to having to do specific defensive work in Europe that they don't need to do as much or with the same intensity as to do domestically. And I think that's where it fell down. I mean, if you want to, like, first of all, if you just want to look at the stats, you know, they're fairly, I was almost going to say unremarkable. So it's like the XG, 2.01 to Leipzig, 1.04 to Celtic. Now, that doesn't include the disallowed goals for Leipzig, obviously. Shots 15 to 11, and the kind of XG per shot is kind of like a slight indication of what was going on. Celtic only had an XG per shot of 0.09, which essentially means their average chance quality was a lot lower than usual. The other kind of stats, if you look at them compared to and just other European games so far, last season and this season, they're almost like just run of the mill. The XG4, yeah, it's a little low, but it's not unremarkable low for Europe. XG against, yeah, slightly high, but it's nothing hugely there. But the kind of interesting thing, one main interesting thing, I guess, from the stats is that Celtic only got into Leipzig's half in control of the ball 50 times, and they only got into Leipzig final third 29 times. Now, that is the second lowest under Ange. The only lower than that was AZ Alkmaar away. Mm-hmm. So I think that kind of tells you, in terms of Celtic, were really struggling to get into specific areas. So I guess then you go, and again, I think it's the day after, there's a lot to unpack. I think we're going to show a lot more details next week when we go through, because I think it is a really, unfortunately, quite an interesting game system-wise. But here's the thing. I'll put this out to you first, Christopher. Celtic's got a lot more chances in the first half than they have in the second half. They create more. But overall, I think the second half is slightly at least a little bit better, because it's at least there's an element of control there. Whereas in the first half, I don't know about you, but I thought it was complete chaos.
Yeah, I thought it was chaos from, and you know, I think that suited Leipzig a lot more than it suited us. I think the funny thing is we did the reaction yesterday, and it was, you know, full of emotion, and it's a tough one to do after defeats like that. But I think we kind of, I know you said there we were potentially better, or from what you could see, better after, in the second half. But I kind of felt after the, and I think a lot Angela did to this as well, we had maybe more control, but we're a little bit more negative. You know, we score this goal, we equalise, and I thought Celtic were going to kind of come out of the traps a little bit more and maybe create a little bit more, but we seem to do the opposite. I mean, what do you think that was? Is that a mentality thing?
So I think they're kind of interconnected to what happened in the first half as well for me. So Louis did said a word on the reaction yesterday. He says compactness. And looking back at it yesterday, I think that was a big key defensively for Celtic, because Celtic's pressing and what we call rest defense was all over the the place in the first half. And what I mean, there's two different things. What I mean is, like, so the pressing, the Celtic pressed, the front line pressed very high and very aggressive, you know. So the front, you know, Kyogo, O'Reilly in the middle, Jota and Maeda, but also Hatate was high up. But then if you looked behind them, there was huge gaps between them. The defensive line was very low. McGregor and the fullbacks often caught in no man land. And I think, you know, I put a couple of things up on Twitter yesterday. As I said, we'll put more examples up when we do the review next week. But these gaps, for me, was the reason that Leipzig could just play out quite easily. They could so easily play out and again and again. And for me, there's a couple of things. This is the systemic issue. So if the front line is going to press really high and very aggressive, you have to push the rest of the team after. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. So, and yet last night I was like, oh, look at Welsh and Jens, you know, are they too inexperienced to push up? Are they maybe a bit scared that they'll be caught behind? But, and again, you can almost put the blame on the front four as well. Should you be pressing that high? Is this the plan? If that's the plan, why is not the rest of the team coming after? And there's a couple of times after, one after about 20 minutes, where Celtic press really high on the side and they're really high up, like Maeda's about 6 yard box. But then when Maeda, you know, I love Dyson, but for example, when the ball then go back up again, it's almost like Maeda is expecting that somebody should be right behind him.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really track back really, really quickly. And then, but there's nobody behind him. There's 50, 60 yards. So for me, okay, you can blame the front, you can blame the defense, but for me, this is looked like a press that hadn't been almost trained on, and it seemed chaotic in terms of the different parts of the team not even speaking to each other. So that word's compactness is exactly right, because if you want to press high and aggressive, especially in Europe, there can't be much space between the lines because you're going to be picked up, and that's what happened in the first half. Leipzig picks them off again and again and again, and while Celtic gets to more chances in the first half, I think that's part of that kind of chaotic nature of the first half and Celtic pushing up with lots of people. Because the other things that happen when Celtic attack, and it is so you know, they're not in an organized press, they're not waiting for Leipzig to play out the press. Celtic attack with so many people, and it was funny because I watched the back of Danish commentary and they were always saying, oh, well, I see Celtic is attacking and they got five players on Leipzig's defensive line. And they're like, well, you know, fair play, but that is risky. And they were like, time and time again, Celtic lost the ball.
Yeah.
And those counterattacks went, there was huge gaps behind it. So to me, Christopher, like, it seemed defensively, the system just completely fell down.
Who, I mean, you know, I don't want to sit here and say whose fault is it, but does that fall at the manager's feet?
I think ultimately, yeah, overall it does. I mean, because Celtic set out, at least the players pressed in a way that was calamitous, essentially. The spaces were just way too big. And I'm leaning on my Danish friends in the commentary a lot here, but they had a couple of funny lines because they essentially said, you know, they said, look, Celtic needs to be better defensively, especially in those counters and transitions. And they really said the line, they don't need to do this against Motherwell, but they need to do it here. And I think within that, maybe some of the issues are that, again, Celtic do not need to defend the same way. They don't need to defend with the same intensity at home. But even in some of the later European games last season, like, I know Buda home, for example, it wasn't this chaotic high press. So I don't know if it's the players who's not really performing what Ange wants to do, or if it's, okay, there's new centre-backs and everything, but there was lots of issues there. It's systematic with that press. So, and that's why I said in the second half, it got better. So you do wonder if there's a slight correction that's happened in the second half to say, look, it's, you know, this isn't working. And Celtic concede a lot less chances, actually, in the second half. But going into the second half, as you said, circling way back to where we started, the second half, Celtic, I think, as you say, too afraid on the ball and just too poor on the ball as well. There were so many ball losses in the second half when Celtic were in a pretty good position.
What do you think this the Celtic team looks without Callum McGregor in it?
Yeah, I think that's a difficult one because he comes out and you say, okay, well, that makes a difference. And it probably did. And you don't really have to want to have big opinions on Abelgo either at this point. But I mean, they're two completely different players on the ball.
Yeah.
You know, Abelgo had, you know, a bit hectic in his passing. It's a bit, I think he was a bit sloppy positionally, but he gets drawn into a Celtic game and he's hardly played for a while. So you can't have a huge statement. But yeah, I think that was an issue. But it's even with Cal McGregor, when he was on the pitch, those first 30 minutes, like, he couldn't really dim up defensively either. On the ball, it's just slightly different. But I think, because I watched it back, you know, maybe same as you and the listeners, I watched it back and I thought, when I watched it live, I thought, oh, see, after the equaliser, it's all Leipzig. If you watch it back, it's actually not. It's actually, there's a period of 15, 20 minutes where there's a lot of ball losses on each side, but there's not really any chances at all. And you kind of feel Celtic's in a position where, okay, they're kind of going to ride this out. It just can be a bit more precise when they have the ball. Silly balls, I see, like, that is a couple of stupid fouls against, where I think it's not a foul and that kind of breaks up the rhythm to keep the ball. But, and then, as you said, as I answered as well, there's then a tendency to be a bit more safe, especially from the centre backs on the ball. It's a lot of easy passes missed by the centre half. But again, passes missed by Riley, by Jota. You know, Maeda has a couple of ball losses. And overall, I think, yeah, there was issues both in possession and out of possession for Celtic. But I thought the main issues out of possession without the ball was in the first half, and the main issues in the on possession with the ball was in the second half.
Yeah, obviously, you're going to do the review with Graham, and that'll be out on Tuesday, which is actually the day of the kind of second game, second leg against Leipzig. What can, you know, there's talk of that, you know, we don't know quite yet if McGregor's going to be available. Probably seems very, very unlikely. What can we do to change? Because it felt to me, it felt like we kind of played into Leipzig's hands. You know, a bit chaotic, hit them on, they'll hit us in the counter attack. They ripped us open a number of times. And I just don't want us to do that at Celtic Park.
I know, I mean, I should have put this caveat up front. That was, Celtic faced a team yesterday that had very good players, and now they have a system that worked really well for those players. So I know they've had a tough start, 11th in the Bundesliga, but this is a team that will end a lot higher. These are better players than Celtic's players, right? But mostly they have, in most positions, I will say they have better players than Celtic. So you have to put that caveat in. And you have to put the caveat that they're always coming into a specific kind of form. Ross has gotten playing well. But then again, you have to, as you say, you can't play into their hands. Then you can still, and the main thing they say is that you talk about, okay, be pragmatic and so on. I think that's fine. But see, the best way for Celtic to probably defeat Leipzig is to keep the ball, is to play their own game, and then defensively be a lot more just smart. Like, not stupid in the press and stuff like that. So I think Celtic can, there's things that you can, I think you can tweak quite easily. You don't have to be, look at Leipzig's press, for example. They don't go charging into the centre backs and the goalkeepers and stuff like that. They're a lot more measured and they'll wait for the right triggers further up the pitch. And then they're aggressive. Then they're intense in the pressing. So I think just Celtic can, that's a few tweaks that need to happen. You know, they need to be a lot more compact defensively. They need to choose their moments and not essentially be headless chickens a lot of the time. And it's fine to be headless chicken in one way, but then the whole team has to be headless chickens and they have to press really, really aggressively. It's like the defensive line and the attacking line had got two different instructions yesterday.
Yeah. So
it has to be a lot more coordinated. It has to be a lot more measured in the pressing. And then with the ball, again, you just have to try and actually play your game and keep the ball.
Superb stuff as always. We'll look back on the review and look forward when we kind of preview the game. But Christian Wolf, thank you as always. Thanks to Christian. Stats Corner, as always, we do a lot of analysis on The Cynic at thecynic.co. We do a review on a Tuesday, which looks back at the game at the weekend from a tactical and stats point of view. So lots of coverage all over the shop. Podcasts every day, as mentioned. Question for you. Callum McGregor, look, there's lots of rumours are flying around about McGregor being out for the season. You know, Ange said in his post-match comments there that it doesn't look good. Nothing's confirmed at this point, but let's just say he's going to be out for a couple of weeks, and he would certainly be suspended for the St Johnstone game anyway. Looking ahead to the Leipzig game, we're not going to touch too much on the Leipzig game at home. We'll cover that Monday, Tuesday, and we've got a preview of that as well. But how big of a loss is this, Barry, if McGregor's out, not even just for this game, but for a potential long spell?
Massive. I think Somani said we were very poor in the first half, and he was included in that, McGregor, but it all fell to shit in the second half without his presence. And I think back to the period he was out last year, out for a couple of periods. Obviously, we had the facial injury, but even before that, sort of the other side of before Christmas, he was out for a long period of time, and you just saw the drop off in quality. You're hoping that the sort of reinforcements we have can step up. Abelgaard, I thought he showed some bits of quality in terms of breaking up play last night.
He was just kind of pulled into it, though. It was like a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah, and I think you, Gallard, made the point in one of the pods earlier this week that you really needed him to be up to speed before these games, because I think he was a signing that was brought in for that extra protection in Europe. And it's very unlike Ange, because I listened to something Ange was talking about last year about the new signings, and he spoke about how to speed up the process of getting players ready, he probably threw them in too early. The likes of, I think, Starfelt had trained once, Kyogo had just met the team
playing, yeah,
by that very day. And you notice that with all these signings, because that's been a criticism of Celtic in the past. We sign guys and you don't see them for 2 or 3 months. So it was just a wee bit of a concern that he hasn't had more minutes, and you could argue there's mitigating circumstances with the red card on Saturday and games being postponed, but he's going to have to play now. And although I don't think he was great last night, I think that experience will stand him in good stead, because of the quality opposition we're playing. Obviously we won't face that domestically, but I think he has to come in now, and you're hoping that the loss of McGregor can be sort of, we need to share it out amongst the team. The only thing I would worry about would be leadership, and I mentioned Joe Hart earlier. I think without Carter Vickers and Starfelt, I think they're leaders. You would hope that they'd be back sooner rather than later, especially if McGregor's out, because you need as many of those leaders in the team to really help drive. It's a young team, let's not forget. We really need experience to drive the team on, so it is a big worry, but you're just hoping that these guys can step up.
Chris, Leipzig on Tuesday, Celtic Park, 8 p.m. kickoff, fourth game of the current campaign. Is it must win?
Yes, definitely. If we get any chance of, if we've got any thoughts of, you know, notions of qualifying for the last 16, which if Madrid, you really want Madrid to kind of just be a juggernaut and win every single game in the group.
Run
for that
to happen. Yep.
Even if we're content with third, which it probably would be if I'm being honest, you know, you'd really need to take something in that game still, I think, because
a draw at least, yeah.
Yeah, because you know, Shakhtar are already on 4 points, they've got a win under their belt. We're also assuming that we're just going to turn up and beat Shakhtar, which I think, I know that's a wee bit further down the line, but we really, really need to be mindful of that.
It's got a bit of Mönchengladbach at home vibes, doesn't it?
Potentially, because the atmosphere that night was dreadful. We went from the Man City game in the first game, which was electric. Same with Madrid, but you don't want to let that taper off. And sometimes when there's an expectation that you're going to get a result, or you should get a result, the crowd maybe aren't as engaged on it as they should be. Anyway, we're jumping forward a bit. For me, it's must win. I don't think you can look at that game and attempt anything other than trying to win the game. The crowd are going to play a huge part. We need to be really intense and on them from the start. The players that we're potentially missing, though, you know, let's not speculate. Let's cross our fingers that, you know, Vickers is fit and McGregor's miraculously fit for that again. I don't know, but we're really going to need some of those big hitters back because I think we need to put in a very, very good performance backed up by the crowd. And to do that, I think we need as many of our top players there as possible.
I think back to last season and a couple of the games we went to, there was a surprise that some of our players were back early and that got the crowd up. If you think back to the game on the 2nd of February, nobody gave McGregor a hope in hell of making it. And that's not to say he's going to play, but if Carter Vickers is in there and you see that an hour and a half before you're in the pub or whatever going to the game, that was the crowd already. I think back to, was it Leverkusen, although he ends up getting scudded, Kyogo and McGregor were in the team, and that really boosted the atmosphere. So something like that would help, but yeah, it's. I think we've spoken already about how sort of historical Champions League play in your mind, and we've got that away thing, but there's often that thing that, our home, the home atmosphere and the home form hasn't been that way for a while. You mentioned the Mönchengladbach, there was also Anderlecht under Rodgers, yeah, where that was flat as well. But I just think the team selection can play a big part in that, and it's got to that stage now where you would probably risk players if they're not 100% fit, just to give you that chance. Because I think to even finish third, I think we need to get a positive result on Tuesday night. I know it could work out differently, but I think if we get 3 points, it really sets us up and gives that Shakhtar game another edge to it. Not that it needs it, but just to do that. So yeah, the team selection could be massive in terms of getting the crowd up before the game as well.
Obviously, we don't know personnel availability, so we're not going to kind of speculate on that in regards to like lineups and stuff. We have a game against St Johnstone on Saturday, 12:30. It's the next kind of big game that we really need to focus on. Domestically, as has mentioned, you know, the game against St Mirren, we obviously lost that game. Lots of changes in that team. The game against Motherwell, but squeaky bum time towards the end. I mean, ultimately, if you look back at it, we actually kind of performed as we needed to perform, but it wasn't as a sparkling performance as you would think. Going to Perth, looking at the kind of last couple of times we've played at Perth, we played St Johnstone 3 times last season. We beat them 2-0, 23rd of October 2021, Celtic 2, St Johnstone 0, Giakoumakis and a penalty from JJ. Boxing Day. In Perth, Boxing Day in Perth, Celtic 3, St Johnstone 1, Abada get 2, and Bitton get the third one. The Joey Dawson show, that was really, you know, stuck together with sellotape type performance. And then we played them in April, and we absolutely scudded them, 7-0, Hatate, Gigi, Maida, Juranovic, Abada, and O'Reilly got 2. I think O'Reilly's second goal was absolutely sensational. Because we were waiting for Kyogo to come on, it was like, put the ball out, but we actually ended up going on and scoring. St Johnstone, is this a team? They're currently in a 9th place in the table. They've won 3, they've drawn 1, and they've lost 5. I spoke to a St Johnstone podcaster today. We put that, I did a little interview with him, and that goes up in the Lunch Club every Friday. He did not seem particularly confident. Their form's been up and down. They started badly, they got up a little bit better, but they lost to Kilmarnock yesterday. How are you feeling about it, Samani? Is it a good fixture to get back to?
Yes, it's a ground that's been pretty kind to us in the last few years, you know. I don't think they are as negative as some teams. That's not to say that they won't be defensive and sit in and pack. Or maybe they are, but they're just not quite as effective as it is some other teams. So it's a ground that I've always felt quite enjoyed going to as well. Last season, the season before, obviously, it was huge for them with the 2 cup wins. And then they really, really dipped last season. You know, they had a real stinker of a season. They seem to, you know, obviously, you've spoken to our St Johnstone podcaster. He'll know far more than me, but they do seem as if they're up and down a bit. For me, it's potentially, though, an ideal game to get a bit of confidence back, because they are, what you said, 9th, you know, they're up and down. We've almost got a point to prove. I know it's a game after a European game midweek, but generally speaking, apart from the last time, we do fairly well in, you know, those games after it. So it's a game where potentially that there's a platform for us to kind of get a wee bit of form, maybe a couple of goals under our belt, play a wee bit more the way that we're used to then take in the Leipzig game on Tuesday. Be helpful if you know, what starting, not Starfelt, I know he's a wee bit away, but it'd be helpful if Vickers was back. You know, as long as you're not risking him by putting him in like that, you wouldn't do that. But if he's fit, you know, it'd be good. It'll give us a boost to bring that in, restore a wee bit of confidence to then take
who drops
in
out?
The Leipzig game. If between Vickers... Welsh and Jens, don't care.
If you had to choose one just to play with...
Jens would drop. I think as long as you've got Vickers, you can cope with either one of them.
I kind of think the same, to be honest. Yeah. Barry, how are you feeling about it?
Yeah, I think last night, that thing I always do after Europe, where I say, oh, I'll be going winning Saturday, I don't even care because I'm so hard about tonight, but I'm starting to see what I want that comfort blanket back. I want to feel good about Celtic again. So I think Samani's right. I think it is a ground that's been kind to us. It'll be interesting to see the team because obviously McGregor would have missed out anyway with suspension. But yeah, we can get a bit of confidence back, get back to the sort of late August, early September domestic form. And if we could get anything half as good as Tannadice, I'd be delighted.
The heady days of Tannadice.
Oh, heady days, aye. They play a back three, two wing-backs. I was speaking to Danny Williams, and he was saying that Adam Montgomery's playing very well currently, so that's good to hear, but he'll obviously be unavailable. That midfield three, we mentioned it at the start of the show. What do you do with that, Sir Manny? Let's just say that obviously McGregor will be suspended anyway. Who would be your midfield three? We should highlight that on the bench yesterday was James McCarthy. There was no Moy. Abelgaard obviously came on as well. McCarthy and Abelgaard both came on. But there was no Moy. He was unavailable. There was no Turnbull. He was unavailable as well. Scott Robertson was on the bench. Who do you put in those three? Who's your three?
Your three for St Johnstone's, your three for Leipzig. So I would assume it would be Abelgaard. I think he needs the time. I would agree with Barry. I think he showed some flashes. He showed some moments of the qualities you think he'll bring. There was one where he kind of just nicked the ball from behind really, really cleanly.
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was.
I think his anticipation's quite good. Like, I think he can anticipate pretty well.
Yeah, and he seemed to make some, you know, interceptions and things like that, but he looked like, you know, he just came off a fortnight in Ibiza and he was ready to hit the pre-season. But if we take the worst possible scenario and McGregor's going to be out, he's who you want in there. I mean, regardless of the fact that, you know, he's defensively minded, he is a guy who's of the apparent quality that you would want to put him in there. And that means that you can then play him with Hatate. O'Reilly's probably first in the queue. But if you can get him and get him embedded into that side, then that... I suppose what I'm trying to say here is, see if McGregor's out, you've really got to hope that this guy's of the quality that we're hoping that he is.
Yeah.
And the only way to find that out is to play him. So for me, you throw him in. Again, he starts on Saturday. Assuming he isn't absolutely pish, you then play him against Leipzig on Tuesday. He came with a reputation. He's came with, a big billing. Let's see if he can do it.
Barry, I'm guessing you'd agree.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing I did find interesting, though, was when he brought Haksabanovic on and he played him sort of centrally in the 10. I wonder if that's something that he's maybe been considering, because when he did sign, that was one of the positions we were told they had been playing. So it could be something we do there. Maybe I would maybe disagree with Samani about the midfield three being the same for Leipzig, because I think you could potentially bring O'Reilly out of it because of his sort of lack of form, and maybe the fact that, as you said there, St Johnstone play a back three, you could have Haksabanovic playing off the striker, just to give you that extra numbers up there. But I would probably bring O'Reilly out, because I don't think he's been great, but he also looks like he's running on empty just now. So
who replaces him?
I think maybe Haksabanovic, yeah. Haksabanovic centrally. So have Hatate, Abelgaard and Haksabanovic in there. And then
interesting.
Bring Abada back in on the right.
Abada's?
Yes.
Play some Abada's.
He's making proper decisions, unlike our manager.
Oh dear. He's turned heel there. Look at that. Nasty.
I think the fact that St Johnstone are low in confidence, and we want to get, as I mentioned, we want to get these new signings up to speed as quick as possible. And I think that's been maybe the criticism of Haksabanovic, because he missed out in pre-season as well. And I know it wouldn't be his preferred position, but as I said, we know he can play there. So I would give it a go, and it gives O'Reilly a chance to sort of try and rediscover his form, but also bring him out of the limelight a wee bit.
Just obviously me mockingly putting the boot into Ange there. I think he got criticism, and rightly so to an extent, you know, for the St Mirren game and making changes. But the reason he was doing it still exists, and it's the point that you're making there. We need to get game time for some of these guys. Haksabanovic is totally a guy you need to see, because you still kind of tell how good, bad, or indifferent he is, because he's just had fleeting cameos. So, with a caveat, as long as we win, you know, I don't have a problem if something like that happened and we start to bring these guys in. Not so much to, not totally, because you want to give people a rest, but you want to give guys like Abelgarda and Haksabanovic some time on the pitch to play themselves into the first 11.
Yeah.
And I think, just on that point as well, the fact that we have looked so short, I think, with all these injuries, is because the guys that have come in, yes, it's a drop-off in quality, but they also aren't match-ready. If you think when Welsh came in, I think he'd only sort of featured. He'd featured at the start of the season, and then he'd featured at the Ross County Cup game, and then you'd ask him to play Champions League football, and he wasn't getting the minutes. So it has that kind of double-edged sword that, yes, they aren't at the level they are, but they also need to be match ready to step in when asked.
Yeah, absolutely. So the St Johnstone game on the Lunch Club tomorrow, we will have a preview of that. We'll have Danny Williams, who's a St Johnstone podcaster. Christian's going to do some opposition analysis for it, and it'll be Colin and Ian on with Paul Carlin. Then on the build-up for the Red Bull Leipzig game, we'll have a preview on the day, on Tuesday. I will have a reaction to it as well, and on Monday in the agenda we'll touch on it as well. Let's go to our lineup quiz, shall we, to finish off?
Aye, all right.
I was pretty poor last week, so
his hands are clasped. He's excited. So
I've been reading every team since the last 25 years.
So
Barry's got to win this. So.
That's what Alan said last week. This
yeah, and he beat. Yeah, so, you know.
Did Alan win?
I think it was a draw. I think I gave Alan a pity shot again, and he used it against me.
So, what I've done is I've chosen...
Tony Stokes.
What I've done is I've chosen the last time, one of the times Celtic beat a German team that wasn't Red Bull Salzburg. Red Bull. It's when we beat Stuttgart 3-1 at home.
Alright,
oh,
I thought you
were
going to say FC Cologne.
No. So, Celtic 3...
That was a vintage, vintage game.
Though. Stuttgart 1, you both have two lives, so I want you to name someone from the lineup. We'll go from one to the other. Barry, seeing as you had... you went second last time, we'll give you first choice this week.
Go Stelian Petrov.
Stelian Petrov, correct.
Didier Agat.
Didier Agat, correct.
Sean Maloney.
Sean Maloney, correct.
Alan Thompson.
Alan Thompson, correct.
Paul Lambert.
Paul Lambert, correct.
Henrik Larsson.
Incorrect.
Broken jaw, didn't he?
Broken jaw, yeah. We got him back for the Liverpool game. Barry?
Let me think. Bobo Baldi.
Bobo Baldi, correct.
I forget who I've said and who you've said now.
So, Manny, come on. Come on, think about it. Think about that team. Those players there. Come on. The road to Seville.
Rab Douglas.
Rab Douglas. Correct.
Let me think. Mialbi.
Johan Mialbi.
Jesus. So, one life each?
One life each. So, basically.
Centre half with Baldy. Stan Varga.
Stan Varga. So you need to get it to win, or it's another draw.
Jackie McNamara.
Jackie McNamara. Correct. So you only missed out two from the first team, which is very good. You did really well there, both of you. Val Haren.
Juice.
And Chris Sutton. On the bench was David Marshall, Silla, Fernandez, Healy, Guppy, Lurson, and Jamie Smith. The goals came from Paul Lambert, Sean Maloney, and Stelian Petrov. And they also had...
So he named all the goals scorers, that wasn't fair.
We also had Andreas Hinkel play for Stuttgart. And the goal scorer, obviously, was our good friend Kevin Karanyi.
I've got a bonus question. Well, maybe I'll put it to both of you.
Okay.
Who was the referee that night?
Colina.
Yes.
Oof, beautiful.
I'm taking that victory win for me there.
Hleb also played for...
Is it Hildebrand, the keeper?
Hildebrand, yes, Thomas, absolutely. Hildebrand. Listen, this has been genuinely fantastic fun, and it's been good to talk through the process of, you know, everything that happened last night. But there's lots of stuff coming up on The Cynic. As I say, podcasts every single day. Got the Lunch Club on Friday. On Saturday, we'll have the reaction to the St Johnstone game, and on Sunday, we've got the fantastic Take Me to Your Paradise, and then, as I say, podcasts every day, sometimes twice a day. But Christopher Somani, it's been a pleasure, sir.
Cathartic. Enjoyed it. Onwards to victory on Saturday and Tuesday.
Excellent. Chris, Barry Gallagher?
Thank you very much. I feel much better now about Celtic. And as I say, I want that comfort blanket of a victory on Saturday, please.
From Christopher Somani, from Barry Gallagher, from myself, Christopher Gallagher, this has been The Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.